Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
Denver Sports Station, 1043 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
Mike Bliss joins us. Nine News Broncos insider, courtesy of Bet River Sportsbook. Mike, welcome back to the program. I said going into the last break, we have a new player in the Broncos ownership picture. Tell us about, I'm going to hopefully say his name right, Matt Ishbia. Mike, you there?
Yes. There you Ishbia, are. You got me?
Yeah. Got you.
He had been mentioned before along in the L.A. Times in February, being part of a group that was a Beverly Hills businessman, Alec Gores, who is the older brother of the Pistons owner, Detroit Pistons owner Tom Gores, and also a Florida investor called named Dean Metropoulos. But Matt Ishbia is not with those guys. It's pretty much him and his brother. They have some other investors in their group, including minority investors. They have it all together to they meet all the NFL requirements. And I still think, you know, if Boley's out, you know, it's still Walton's the guy to beat here. And Josh Harris is probably running second. He has a nice group together. But Ishbia is going to, you know, it sounds like the Ishbias are going to put together a competitive bid. Second round bids will be called for here in a couple weeks. We'll find out more then. We're getting a little closer to finding out who the next Broncos owner is, but it's still a little ways away.
Any timetable, Mike? I mean, when's your best guess that this thing might happen and be done and we know who the next owner of the Denver Broncos is?
Well, I think in the first week of June, they'll ask for the second round bids. You know, they've all made first-round bids, and we'll see about the second-round bids. And, you know, the bankers, Steve Greenberg and Joe Lucchesi, are running the thing. And when they get those second-round bids in, you know, I think they'll do a little massaging and manipulating. You know, it's an auction-type thing. Their responsibility is to the Bolin children, as the beneficiaries, to get the highest bid. The biggest price. And so I think after the second round bids, I think it'll be a little while longer to say, well, look, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not sure if this would get out or not, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Walton comes in, let's say at $4 billion. Gee, Josh, can you match it or go higher? Gee, Matt Ishbia, can you go a little higher than that? What I think is going to be interesting here, guys, is the economy's kind of fallen since this process started. And inflation has really hit the market, and Walmart, along with Target, is, you know, one of the businesses that's been hit pretty hard here after the first quarter. And so I wonder how much that'll affect the bid. If it's now where it looked like it was going up to $5 billion, I wonder if maybe back off of that a little bit.
Mike, do you have any best guess on the timeline here?
Well, after they massage things, I mean, I think it could happen as soon. I'm going to give you a range. As soon as late June.
Okay.
And, you know, and then my expectation has always been around training camp. And, you know, Joe Ellis said before the season, which puts it to the end of August. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a whole lot of difference. I mean, we're talking 3 months from now. Anywhere from 1 month to 3 months from now is the range. Hopefully, you know, sooner rather than later, so we can move on with things.
Yeah. Mike, I got to ask you about Byron Allen and his group. I just my brain can't go. I need someone to help me out how a guy that's only worth like $450 million can get into this type of party. I guess, I mean, how many investors does he have behind him? And these investors have to have a lot more money than he does. Why would they let him be the principal owner? I'm just not understanding this Byron Allen group, how they're part of this party. Can you help me out?
Yeah. We'll see on the second round bids again. And, you know, everybody made first round bids, and it got down from 10 to 5 groups. I don't think Byron Allen, by any means, is the leader in the clubhouse. We know of 3 people that came out to visit here in the last 2 or 3 weeks, and he has not visited, by the way. So that would seem to indicate that he's not one of the leaders in the clubhouse here. But he would be, according to sources that are, you know, close to the Byron Allen group, he would be the controlling owner, which would mean he would have to come up with, you know, he would have to come up with $1.2 billion on $4 billion if that's the final asking price. That's 30% to become a controlling owner. And apparently he can do that. And, you know, the net worth, those are guesstimates. Maybe they got a half a billion laying underneath the mattress that Forbes doesn't know about.
Oh, Mike, great stuff. As always, been following your reporting on ownership really from the very start. You're doing a great job. Keep it up, and we'll hang tight and just wait for more news.
You got it, guys.
Thanks, Mike. All right, there he goes. Mike Kliss, courtesy of Bet River Sportsbook. I will buy you lunch tomorrow.
Uh-oh.
I'll buy the whole show lunch, Dante included. Well, I'll get some pizzas in here. Matt Ishbia was on the Michigan State National Championship team in the year 2000, coached by Tom Izzo.
Okay.
Just Stokely.
Yeah.
I'll buy everyone lunch tomorrow if you could tell me who the leading scorer was. He played 11 years in the NBA.
Mateen Cleese?
No, that was a really good guess. That's a really freaking good guess because he was the second leading scorer on that team.
Sorry, Dante.
Morris Peterson averaged 17 a game for that group.
All right.
There's your little trivia for the day.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was fun. I like when you do that.
Matt Ishbia, newest in the fold. I mean, we're just learning about these guys. I mentioned he was on that a championship team, but he and his brother now in the running. Okay. Kind of just, you know, mini update. Again, it doesn't change the dynamics for me at all because Robert Walton is still in the mix.
Yeah, he's still my favorite to win this thing. The guy that I hope wins it right now with what we've learned and who's out there. I think he's the best one for it. But we'll see how this thing plays out. 1 to 3 months kind of time frame here.
Yeah.
So it's getting closer. You know, training camp's getting here. And, you know, we got this pretty big news, right, of who the next owner is going to be here shortly, which is cool. It's exciting.
It is that. And we'll just continue to wait. Like I said, we get these little updates, who's in, who's out, okay. But until we just get the solid, concrete news of who it's going to be, we'll just wait. There's nothing else to do. Okay, who am I to move on from the segment before I thank our listeners in Castle Rock for making 104.3 the Fan part of your day?
See Rock.
All right. A national football voice put together.
You only had 4 reminders. Just 4.
He put together his, speaking of 4, we move on to 5. Because the national voice put out his top 5 running backs under 25. Did Javonte Williams make the list? Hang tight. It's next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Stoke, it's list season.
Oh.
It's list season.
Okay.
Kind of got your mock draft season. You got your, power ranking season. It's list season. As we got our big screen TV here in our Superbook.com studios live from Golden State. Can't wait to watch that game tonight. Can't decide if the Mavs are going to throw another good punch or it's just party time for the Warriors.
It's party time for the Warriors.
And on a split screen, you had Malika Andrews, who just won an Emmy 2 nights ago, who is just a rock star. at ESPN. Absolute rock star. But her sister was the other girl.
Really?
Young woman, Kendra Andrews, who I know personally because she spent 2 years here in Denver covering the Nuggets.
Wow.
So I'd go down the Ball Arena, you know, and hang out. I'm like, okay. Then I heard she had got, you know, moved over to the West Coast, and there they are. How about that? Two sisters on a split screen.
That's cool.
Yeah, very cool. Okay. A National Football Voice put out his top five running backs, 25 or under. Okay. Who's the best running back in football that's 25 or under?
Well, we did that list of players, and I remember one name, and it's got to be this guy at the top of the list, Jonathan Taylor.
Jonathan Taylor. Yes. Jonathan Taylor is arguably, along with King Henry, who nearly ran for 1,000 yards in 8 games last year. You realize that?
He was on a tear.
Derrick Henry finished with 937 yards. He played 8 games. He finished as the 9th leading rusher in the league. He played 8 games.
Not even half the season.
It's hysterical, right? Yeah. It's just beyond. No, but Jonathan Taylor, you're right. But by the way, the guy making the list is Peter Schrager, a senior writer for FoxSports.com. You see him on Good Morning Football on NFL Network, and they just won an Emmy. They're doing a really good job, that morning show. But Jonathan Taylor's number one on his list. Okay. Number two on Peter Schrager's list, Najee Harris.
Ooh.
Who is, I believe, the 4th leading rusher in the sport last year, 1,200 yards. Was that last year his first year?
Yeah.
It was his first year, right? First round pick, Alabama.
Yep.
Okay. So that's number two on his list. Number three, you're going to have to help me with this one. Cam Akers.
Ooh.
Is number three on Peter Schrager's list.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Cam Akers, I mean, okay, nothing special. And he was coming off that Achilles last year, which was remarkable.
Could not believe he came back.
Coming back from that was remarkable. And he was the one that fumbled it. Didn't he fumble the ball? He was the one that fumbled in the Bucks game? That was him?
Oh, whoa. I think you're right.
A bad fumble?
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, look, no, I don't think he should be that high.
I don't think so either. Maybe
I'd put Javonte Williams in front of him right now in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat.
You just snatched the thought out of my head.
What I do. I see it and I snatch it.
Number four on Peter Schrager's list of top five running backs under the age of 25, Javonte Williams.
Okay. All right. Now you're getting back on track. You lost me for a little bit. And like, man, this guy's nuts. He's off his rocker. And then, okay, all right. I'll give you a freebie, Peter.
I'm just gonna repeat my own thought that you took from me.
Okay.
I would take Javonte Williams over Cam Akers 10 times out of 10.
Yeah.
Cam Akers did not look good when he came back in the playoffs. Just flat out did not look good. He averaged 2.6 yards a carry, 43 yards a game.
Imagine Javonte Williams in that offense.
Oh,
come on.
Wouldn't be splitting. Well, we'll see. We'll see how it all shakes out. And then he had DeAndre Swift there at number five.
Yeah, running back out of plays for the Lions.
Yeah. Where was he at? Georgia?
Yeah.
This time next year, Javonte Williams will be unanimously on everyone's what? This time next year, Javonte Williams will be on everyone's top 10 list. Like everyone. Like you just agree on certain guys. It's like Nick Chubb. Yeah, he's going to be Jonathan Taylor. Yeah. It is like this, when we have these conversations next year, are we still having to like go back and forth with James Merrillat? Or is it just going to be settled?
No, I don't think it's settled. I think here, we feel great about him and great about the direction he's heading. But Zach, I think you're off a little bit on how the backs get used. I think Melvin gets more attempts than we would like and that you think he's going to get. So the world won't really be able to see Javonte. Now you'll be able to, they'll put those stats up there where, you know, he's a tackle breaking machine. You put him up there with Derrick Henry and Jonathan Taylor when it comes to breaking tackles and yards after contact, right? All that's great. And we see it here, but we still have the one guy that's holding everything up. He's back again.
Mm.
Melvin Gordon. And Melvin will get his carries. He will get his carries. And I do think that you possibly will lose that bet. This thing is a coin flip. And I think Melvin might have the edge. So that's the problem, Zach. I can't tell you that he's going to be a top 10 like on every list, because I don't know if it's going to be even Steven split carries again. Or is he going to get the bulk of the carries? Well, then, yeah, of course he'll be everybody's top 10 running backs at the bare minimum. But it might be one of those where, you know, he ends up with 950 yards. Melvin ends up with 907 yards.
Oh, my gosh.
One guy has 240 carries. The other guy has 230.
I'm telling you, as insufferable as you are with your Raiders campaign, just expect it. Because if it's handled like that, let me just ask you a question. Is Derrick Henry going to do a backflip into the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Okay. Who do you think averaged more yards per carry last year? Derrick Henry or Javonte Williams?
I would say that Derrick Henry did.
Of course. If you ask 100 football fans, he had 99. Javonte Williams averaged more yards a carry. He had more broken tackles than Jonathan Taylor as a rookie. First time in the NFL. He's played 16 more games than I have. What the hell are we talking about?
We don't want to overuse him, Zach. We don't want to overuse him, man. Got to keep our running back fresh. For like when he turns 32.
Like this list, 25 and under, like this is the prime of running backs.
Yeah.
This is it. And I told you, it's Bill Withers. It's Bill Withers. Keep on using me until you use me up. It's the running back position.
Yes, I'm with you, man. That's why I didn't want him to re-sign Melvin Gordon. Not that he's not good, but he's just going to...
It cloudies it.
Muddies it.
Yeah, that's better.
No, it's all good.
Cloudies it.
Yeah, well, you do that a lot. I just try to help you out and give you better things to use.
I do it. I'm trying to make you feel comfortable.
Yeah, well, I'm very comfortable. Just worry about yourself and clouding things up over there. Look, they shouldn't. This thing should have been his path and, like, nothing standing in his way. But you bring Melvin Gordon back, and Melvin Gordon's a good running back.
He is. So it's not about – it feels like I'm talking about KJ Hamler. About the actual player. It's about – just a philosophy, and you have a young thoroughbred.
And the other thing working against you in your bet with Maryland on steak dinner on who's going to be the first starter, like the starter, Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams, man, I think Melvin Gordon's a really good fit in the style of an offense. And he's a veteran. It's just like, well, we're going to use both these guys. We're going to get a really good idea of this coaching staff.
Real quick, what makes him a really good fit?
This is that offense where you stretch, put a foot in the ground, and cut back and keep going. I mean, he's obviously fast, he's quick. I mean, he can break tackles also. I just think when you look at his body type, when you look at how he runs the football, this style of an offense just fits him really, really good. Now, I might be mistaken, and the other offense might have been better suited for him. But I look at this style of an offense and how it's how it works with the stretch run plays by the running back, and then, like I said, foot in the ground. You see your running lane, and then you just go, and you never know where it's going to be. It could be the 4-hole, the 6-hole, the 8-hole. You know, I mean, it could hit in any of those spots. And I just think that Melvin Gordon, his running style, is a really good fit for this style of an offense. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why they did bring him back.
So he can put his foot in the ground, and he could be like, he's a more of a home run hitter.
Yeah.
Then why did Javonte have twice as many big plays as Melvin last year? Melvin Gordon,
but hey,
in 203 carries.
But wait,
three carries of 20 yards or more.
But wait, that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm telling you, this offense just fits him. Like, he should fit it well. It should be like a good match with how this offense is run and his running style. That was last year's.
Melvin's got the breakaway speed. Melvin's a home runner. We saw one play.
That was
203 carries.
That was the
first game of the year?
Yeah.
He had three big plays all year with the same amount of carries. Javonte had six. And Javonte's supposed to be not the home run guy.
I'm not dying on that hill, brother. I'm with you. I'm just giving you something to think about.
Yeah. No.
What it could look like.
What it could. Sure. Better not.
I'm with you. But what happens if it is and Melvin's looks really good?
I'll be receptive to
will
that.
You? Okay.
I will. This is
you
about
want
the
James
Broncos
Merrill
first.
No. You want James Merrill out.
No.
Put the blinders on. And
that man's going to owe me a third steak dinner. And hang tight. They'll hold his feet to the fire.
Oh.
That man joins us next.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
James Merrill at DenverFan.com drops by. We were just recapping the dynamics of your and I's steak bet.
Oh, okay.
You've paid one of those off.
Yes, I have. It was a great time.
It was a great time. You're in debt for another one. And then there's a future one that could cash this season.
Okay. Which is, remind me of that one.
Who's the Broncos
opening day running back?
Opening day running back.
The reason I couldn't remember is because I've already counted that as a makeup. Right? Okay. Like, that's going to make up for what I owe you. I just know that one's going to hit. And then I owe Stoke because I bet him that Drew Lock would start and he had Teddy Bridgewater. So, like, I got quite the IOU stack building here.
Yes, you do. Although Stoke, it seems like this time around is like, James might be right about this one. And then him most recently in the previous segment saying, this offense in particular, stretch, foot in the ground, go.
Yeah.
Profiles like a Melvin Gordon friendly offense.
I would agree with that. That's why I went that direction. It's really not how I want to see it go. I wanted to see him go with Javonte Williams, have him be the workhorse back, and let's see what he can do. But once they brought Melvin Gordon back, it's like, well, that was for a reason. Right, they didn't bring him back here to be the Mike Boone role. If you just want a spot guy, they already had a guy to do that. It was Mike Boone. Or you draft somebody with one of your 3 fifth-round picks and let them fill that role. He's back here for a reason. It's because they like him. They think he's a good back. They think he fits their system.
They like him, but they love Javonte.
Do they?
Yes. They moved up 5 spots to the top, very tippy-tippy top of the second round,
right.
Javonte.
Different coaching staff
knows George Payton, and if your boss goes about a certain topic or a subject in a particular way that he makes it known that he loves a certain thing, and you're a first-time guy under him, it might be wise to be receptive.
But he also brought back Melvin Gordon this year. So
right.
After they let him walk and there was nowhere to go and you see him in the distance, but
prodigal
son has returned.
He still brought him back. And they think it worked out well last year with the split carries. I think who George Payton likes is third or fourth on the priority list here. I think it's, one, who does Russell Wilson like? And a lot of that is who do you trust to protect you in pass protection? I don't think Javonte Williams is bad at it, but Melvin Gordon is the veteran. So you just, and he's better at it at this point. So I think Russell Wilson probably trusts him better. And then it's who does Nathaniel Hackett like better? And I don't know, but they brought back Melvin Gordon again for a reason.
Yep.
And then I think down the list is, well, who does George Payton like better? And who did he draft for the previous regime? That was Javonte Williams. I think things change when you bring in a new coach and certainly when you bring in a new quarterback. And I can't stand the fact that Melvin Gordon was off doing a podcast instead of being at OTA.
It's ridiculous. Just no awareness.
It drives me nuts.
No awareness.
And not only off doing it, but while your team is practicing, you're tweeting about how that was the best podcast you've been on in a while.
During the practice.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't make that up.
You can't. And so that bothers me. And as a longtime fan of a team that's gone through the worst stretch since I've been alive, and that's been a while, it's just, it irks me to no end. And I think everybody should be there and trying to turn this culture around and trying to turn this losing ways around. So it drives me nuts. But he's the better player. He is at the moment. He's the better player.
Melvin Gordon's not the better player right now than Javonte Williams. Javonte Williams had twice as many big plays. He fumbled one-third of the time. He averaged the same amount of yards per carry, and he led the league in broken tackles. How can you look at that and say that one, not even that they're the same, but that the other guy's better than him?
Melvin Gordon scored 10 touchdowns and arguably one of the 5 or 6 worst offenses in the league. He had 10 touchdowns.
They give it to him right at the goal line. I will admit, Melvin has a nose for it.
He had a 70-yard touchdown against the Giants.
He had one of those. For the home run hitter, do you know how many big plays he had through the whole year? 203 carries? How many big plays do you think?
I probably had 12.
How many big plays would you guess Melvin Gordon had over an entire season?
On a percentage of touches, Javonte was 15th in the league, Melvin was 17th, or vice versa. I actually think it was vice versa.
Yeah,
I think Melvin was 15th and Javonte was 17th. So they're the same guy.
How many on big plays. I'm asking for a third time. How many big plays for the home run hitter do you think he had last season?
12.
Three.
Oh, come on. He wouldn't have been
three.
How did he end up ahead of Javonte Williams on that stat?
James, percentage I'm of touches. Just delivering you the facts.
I'll find it for you.
Three I'll find big it plays the whole season.
No.
All right, wait. Okay.
He's a better player right now.
Wait, hold on. Are you just saying that's like an alternate fact that you don't believe that he had three plays?
We went over it when I was with you guys last week. It was the stat that came out. I'll find it. It was percentage of touches that turned out to be big plays. Melvin Gordon was 15th of all running backs. And Javonte Williams was 17th.
He had three rushes of 20 yards or more. Have. Six.
Colorado Avalanche. Okay, we got to go here.
Oh, the panic meter's at 10.
I'm closer. I'm closer.
Concern a meter. That thing is panic paid. Meter, like if 10. It had an 11 or a 12, it'd be there. Last night was their Raheem Moore game. That's what it was.
Well, but the only thing is they have a chance to make you just not even just remember that, right? So they have two more opportunities to, you know, right or wrong here. Well, but like when you look at it, you know, you've been around here, you've seen them all the sports, all the teams, all the disasters, all the collapses. Where does this one rank right now? Right now, because obviously it could change. They're going to win tomorrow night. We can all exhale, but right now, where does last night rank in terms of just collapses in Broncos? Colorado sports.
It has a chance to be like a top five just disaster. And so I shouldn't say it's the Raheem Moore game. It's the Raheem Moore play. Because the Broncos didn't lose the game on that play. They still went into overtime and actually lost in double overtime, but it effectively ended it.
Thanks for reminding me.
So that game last night didn't end the series. But my fear, and the reason my panic meter's pegged at 10, is that it does effectively end the series. And if it ends up doing that, then it's right there with the Raheem Moore game. It's the Jacksonville game.
Yeah.
It's the Anthony Carter can't get the ball inbound in the Western Conference Finals. It's Mason Plumlee can't cover Anthony Davis in the Western Conference Finals.
Switch.
It's you know, Matt Holliday getting picked off first base to end game two of the World Series. It's those kind of plays of like, that was a one-run game and you get picked off first base. Like,
it's infamous.
What are we doing?
Yeah.
And it goes into that same kind of thing because the series was over. Done. There's not a person in this town that didn't think that when it was 3-0.
What happens if it's something that I can't hardly go to and they do? They lose the next two and they are eliminated again the second round. I mean, what's the trickle-down effect here? I mean, when you look at the coaching staff, when you look at this team, I mean, what happens this offseason if Bednar comes back? There's no chance of that, right?
There shouldn't be, but I think he comes back. I think he would survive it. I think that's that's the history we've seen down at Ball Arena is in most towns and in most markets and with most teams, it would be, hey, heads are going to roll. And I think sometimes that can be an overreaction and you do knee-jerk things and you get rid of good people. So I don't think the way KSE has done it with the Nuggets and Avs is necessarily bad, but at some point you got to make a change. My guess would be all right, last year it was Philip Grubauer was the scapegoat. This year it's Darcy Kemper. He's the scapegoat. He blew it in game five, and he's going to be the guy we're going to go address that position. That would be my guess as to what would happen. I think that would be it. Wow. I think Jared Bednar, at that point, you got to say, look, we got to try something different. Yeah. This isn't working. It's 4 years in a row at that point. And almost for the reason of fast forward to a year. Right, we said it when they got the second round this year. Hey, this has all been just an exercise to get to this point, and now it's got to be different. A year from now, it's going to be the same conversation with another chapter to it. If it's all the same characters, it's going to be hard to convince the people in the room it's going to be different.
I was going to say, you're going to cross over, not to apathy, but to you're just not a believable team. If they don't get out of the second round, this will be 4 years in a row.
I just would look at it and say, well, again, a year from now, why would it be any different? You want Nathan MacKinnon and Gabe Landeskog and Cale Makar to look around and say, you know why it's going to be different this year? Because we got this guy, and he's won two cups, and he's going to push the right buttons, and he's going to help us get over the hump. Even if Jared Bednar wasn't really the guy that was at fault, you have to change the story somewhat. Otherwise, how are you going to sell it, right? It's a little bit of like the Broncos, and we go down there every year, and it's an insert different, you know, mediocre quarterback here. At some point, the fan base just goes, this ain't going to be any different. We've seen this thing before. That's where the Avs would turn if you don't change a big factor in it. And the only big factor that really is realistic is the coach.
If y'all got a crew, you got to have a fall guy in the crew.
Mm. There will be a fall guy.
Darcy Kemper's
a
fall guy.
For some reason.
That's not enough, man.
No. It's not enough, but that's going to be the fall guy.
And I like Jared Bednar.
I do too.
I think he's a good coach for this team. I think he's the right coach for this team. But if it falls apart this year in the second round again, there is no chance you bring him back. None. I'm sorry.
Last night was the Clippers being up 17 or whatever it was against 15. The Nuggets in Game 5.
Yeah. Yep.
That's what it was.
Yep. But you just hope that that screen grab from last night doesn't make the rounds like the Clippers has through the last
year.
And
it turns into just kind of a gut punch footnote if they win tomorrow night or they win Sunday.
Yep.
Not a big deal.
Yep. Okay.
What do you think happens? Real quick.
I think they lose in 7.
Oh my gosh. Get out.
You asked me my honest answer. That's what I think.
Hang tight. I want to dive into that coming up next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
We couldn't let him leave, even though Stokely tried to throw him out. And I'm just
trying to be so optimistic here, and I was hoping that he would say, "We got this tomorrow night. Don't worry about it."
So
kind of how we feel, right? Is that how you feel?
Yeah. So you and I, like, it took me 2 hours of talking through it to sort of halfway put it behind me. But it's also the day after, during commercial break, I marched out to the car, got my Avalanche sweater, had to change just a mindset.
Right.
Like flush it.
Yep.
Okay. But at the same time, James, you know, got some people say, oh, James loves his hot takes, you know. But I don't think it's a hot take. I've never seen the Avs do it. This is a group in St. Louis that has done it. I believe the Avs will find a way to win one of the next two. I believe that. But at the same time, I'm not going to tell you you're crazy for saying what you said.
I hope the Avs find a way to do it. But right now, who got on a plane last night and was like, hey, we're charmed? And who got on a plane last night and said, I don't know what we have to do to get out of the second round? Right? Like, the Blues are looking at it saying, we're on house money. How in the world did we pull that game off? Like, we were toast two times, probably three. You could even count overtime as another time the Avs blew it. Because they dominated overtime in terms of just controlling the puck and getting more shots and more opportunities, and they still couldn't close out the deal. If you're the Blues, just like, apparently we're bulletproof here in this series, so you're feeling great and you're going home and that building's going to be rocking, and what are the odds the Avs win 3 out of 3 in St. Louis? Like, that's not great. And if you're the Avs, it has to be in your head of how on earth do we get out of this round? What do we have to do? Because even though you blew the 3-0 lead, Nathan MacKinnon goes one on the Blues and gets a goal that people in this town are going to remember and talk about forever. It's up there with the John Elway helicopter play where it was just a star saying, enough of this garbage. I'm going to show you the way to get to victory here. And you wasted that. Like, that's a big thing to bounce back from. And then, okay, so they come back game 7s in Denver. Look at the Avs' last 4 games in Denver. They've lost 2. They won 1 in overtime. I mean, they're just not playing particularly well.
Far better on the road.
Far better. They're unbeaten on the road. So that's the one. If you're looking for a positive, they're unbeaten on the road in the postseason. But if they're coming back here for Game 7, who's the pressure on? It ain't on St. Louis at that point. It's on Colorado.
Well, look, this is the way, and everything you said is spot on, but this is the way I'm looking at it. I'm taking the step back, and I'm looking at it. Who's got the better hockey team?
Colorado.
Right? Who's got the, you know, best player on the ice by far?
The
you know,
especially,
I mean, and you could say the best 2 or 3 players sometimes.
Who's got the better goaltender? Colorado. They do. And
right.
It's an easy day to pick on Darcy Kemper because he was not good last night.
You're right.
But they
going up against their backup guy who was their starter but got benched for a reason. I mean, that's what I go to, and that's what I'm leaning on here whenever you start telling me those things. And then I also say, okay, you're right about, like, okay, all of a sudden, Avs had to get on the plane, and, you know, this thing was over. But I think for them, the luxury of knowing that they still have to lose 2 times. It's not just one game where we get a bad bounce, and that might be when you start feeling the pressure. So I'm just going back to all of that and saying, I got it. It's on the road, but – I heard one of those announcers two games ago on the TNT thing or whatever, and they got the panel up there, and a former player, I don't know his name, but he said he thought it was easier to play on the road in playoff games than it was at home. And that's the way the Avs look like they're playing. I don't think it affects you that much there. And the Avs seem like that team that relishes that. I mean, we saw it with Kadri. Mm-hmm. I think they muster that up, and they get it done tomorrow night.
Even back to the Nashville series, you look at game two. It took overtime.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a 2-1. Like, you're at home against, like, the eight.
They rolled in game one against Nashville at home. Since then at home, there have been some struggles. It just it almost looks like a team that thinks they can just show up and win at home because, hey, they're at home and they're the better team. They are the better team. And you know what? If you're looking for reasons to be positive, that's at the top of the list because more often than not, talent wins out, especially when you're playing in a series. It's not a one-and-done kind of thing. It's not the NCAA tournament. It's not the NFL playoffs. Okay, talent is going to win out. I think the psychological part of it is huge in this case. I just think it's hard to overstate it.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. The psychological part of it. Really quick about the home road thing. The Avs were like the greatest home team of all time this year.
I know.
They were 32-5-4 at Ball Arena. They had entire months where they didn't lose at home.
They lost five home games all season long. Lost
remarkable.
Five games.
Remarkable. And they blew that one.
And they blew that one. And they've lost two home games in this series.
I just, man, you talk about that psychological standpoint. I'm not calling. I would never want to. The Avs have an incredible professionalism about them this year. I think they're tougher than they've ever been. But you just question whether the demons that are in the way, way back of their head have worked their way towards the middle to the front of the skull.
Well, and that's on Bednar. You know, yeah. This is on your head coach.
This is his moment to prove he's the right guy. This is it.
Exactly. And your captains and your leaders, right? To like, we are not worrying about what happened the previous 3 years. We're a different team. Let's go take care of our business. Everything is A-OK. We're not going to panic here. That's who this is on.
The problem is they're not that much different.
No, but if it doesn't, I got it. But if it doesn't happen, then that's why you got to start at the top, unfortunately. And I don't want to see that happen, but there's no way Jared Bednar can come back if you have this type of collapse. I mean, just absolutely no way at all. And I don't think it will happen.
The other thing you need, at some point, you need a Cale Makar signing that isn't him doing something poorly on the defensive end. Because he's had three moments in this series. The one that led to the Ryan O'Reilly goal in game one.
Yep.
They bounced back from that. The other one, it was 2-1. They were coming back in game two, had a shot to get back in that game. He comes up and misses the puck. It turns into a breakaway the other way. It's 3-1, game over. And last night, I believe it was the goal that tied it at 3-3. He's right in front of the net, and the puck is kind of bouncing around, rolling around, but he whiffs on it twice. It was very much like the Ryan O'Reilly puck where he just couldn't clear it. It's like, man, you got to make those plays, and if you don't, you at least have to offset it with you're doing something on the offensive end, and he's been a no-show. I mean, Mikko Rantanen's basically a no-show. He got one goal, it was an empty netter with 1 second left. But Cale Makar, going to be a great player, is a great player, going to be here for a decade. He's been a detriment in this series.
I just can't believe, on the heels of what you just said, that the top line across the series has been what it's been. And Mikko Rantanen, for all intents and purposes, I'm not going to include that empty net goal with 1 second left, which I was hoping was a slump buster. Like, last night, you talk about high danger chances?
Yeah.
You got to convert one of those. For him to take two shots and both of them right, it just... But you're telling me that Cale Makar and Mikko Rantanen have combined for no goals and you still have a 3-2 lead. I don't know how. If you told me that before the series, like, hey, just a heads up, for all intents and purposes, Mikko and Cale, no goals through five games, I'd be like, oh, the Avs are in big trouble. Here they are with a 3-2 lead.
Yeah, and it's those two guys who needs to step up? Well, good. We're not asking for, you know, some second or third liner that has to step up and play above his head. We're asking for two of your stars have to show up and play like it, and if they do, okay, then they'll survive. If they don't, if it keeps going this way with those two guys being no-shows, I don't like their chances. I don't. And I want to be wrong. I'm not hoping that's the case, but I just think last night was a gut punch, and sometimes it's tough to bounce back from those.
You and Zach need to step up.
KKFN.
Nope, I actually beat you to it. You shouldn't have flagged it. You shouldn't have flagged it. You're being dishonest.
Bye-bye.
You're being dishonest. You flagged it, and I beat you. You flagged it, and I beat you. I love it.
I can't see the clock in this seat, so that's my mully.
We let it go way too long. Tyler, being...
Because I was rambling?
I'm always honest every single time. Stokely gave it away. You knocked it out of the park.
Let's go! Yeah.
Let's go! Yeah,
and there's real regret from him on the way out the door. There's real regret. Yeah. There's real regret.
I get so caught up in making good points.
Dude, here's a funny thing, and he can't hear us now. He's in the side studio. That he's actually so competitive, that just bothered him right now. Because see the look on his red little face, that little ugly face of his.
Oh, man.
It ruined his day. He had a great show.
He did. He gave it away. You did get there first. He gave it away.
Yeah, he flagged it. Don't do that. What's up, man?
Sorry. I just took over. I just walked in here and I just became a judge.
Dude.
Yeah. I mean, it went your way, so you can't be mad about that.
Not mad at all. I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
Thrilled. D-Mac is going to be joining us here in just a minute,
Hopefully we got him tuned in. D-Mac, you know what? D-Mac got punished. He got punished because he deserved to go back to St. Louis for a million different reasons. That guy, 12 different times on the show yesterday, was just being ridiculous. I told him to knock it off.
Dude, I don't know.
Twitter.
What is his deal?
On Twitter, at the beginning of the second, he writes the game's over. Then he starts counting it down. He's like 10 minutes left to Alberta.
Yeah.
9 minutes left to Alberta. He deserves to go back to St. Louis.
You're spot on, and I think his defense mechanism is to downplay it even more.
Oh, yeah.
I think because I said, hey, what's your concernometer? His response goes, a 3. And like, hold on a second. I just don't understand how a rational fan that understands the historical context and everything that you just saw could be so dismissive.
You know,
I don't get. I love my guy.
Where are you at?
A 7 or 8?
That's too high.
See,
I'm not going to go 3 because I think if you say 3, you're not being honest. There's got to be a panic meter. There's an internal doomsday meter. James and I talked about this last week.
Yep.
There's a doomsday meter that I've got that thing cranked up. That thing's at like an 8 or a 9. But then there's a reality meter. And if I force myself to live within reality, I put it like a 6. I mean, these guys are stinking good. They've dominated the whole postseason. Do I think they're going to stop being good? Do I think they can't win 1 out of 2 games? No.
I don't think they're in the second round, so to say they've dominated the whole postseason, okay, I'll throw a baby challenge flag on that.
Well, you know, what are you going to challenge? I mean, we've only got what we played.
No, they dominated Nashville. I don't think they've dominated the Blues. They dominated their 1-8 matchup.
They dominated Nashville, and they've looked really good against the Blues. And there's been 2 games that should have been absolute blowouts, that they let the Blues back into it. Unfortunately, lost this one. But there were 2 games that they did dominate for the majority of the game.
You know, I was on with Sandy and Sean last night, right after the game. And Sandy made an interesting point. The Avs actually didn't play that well last night. Nathan MacKinnon just played great.
Oh, that's probably true.
If you take him out of the equation, he kind of bailed him out on what was sort of not crappy, but did they really, as a team, outplay the Blues? Like, the shots weren't lopsided like some of those other games where we looked at it and said, well, it was Connor Ingram or it was Binnington standing on his head. Like, it wasn't that kind of game last night. It was Nathan MacKinnon was basically covering some flaws last night, and that still wasn't enough because everybody else just was that bad. That was, and I'm paraphrasing Sandy's point on it. I'm like, okay, that might be pretty accurate. If Nathan MacKinnon didn't play last night, the Avs get rolled.
Probably. A little bit of a side note here, but am I the only one? And look, I'm not trying to call out Nathan MacKinnon at all. I mean, that was one of the most impressive performances I've ever seen. That was Michael Jordan out there on ice. That goal might have been the greatest goal I've ever seen in my life.
Supernova.
But am I the only one that within like the first 5 minutes of that game was like, where has MacKinnon been? Like, how can you do that? He looked, within 5 minutes, he looked different than everybody else on the ice.
It looked like he was shot out of a cannon.
And I'm like,
and you're like, where has that guy been?
Where's that been?
But here's the thing, and this is what's a little bit more concerning. If you take a step back, look at the broader view. MacKinnon has not been great this series. Mikko Rantanen has been a no-show this year. I know about the assist. I got it. But this is your leading goal scorer for the season. Cale Makar, who we were just crowning as like the best defensive player in the history of the game a week ago, has been non-existent from an offensive output.
It's been Arturi Lehkonen and Logan O'Connor and Josh Manson and Sammy G early. Like, that's who has been. And I tell you, I said baby challenge flag earlier, Tyler, because game one, you barely got by. You win 3-2 in overtime. Game two, you get dominated 4-1.
That was the worst game of them all by far.
It was.
I mean, game two, the Avs, they got dominated.
It was, and it was bizarre. It was just the whole thing was bizarre sitting there watching it. Games three and four is where I'll relent and say the Avs were firmly in control. But even if you examine game four closely, it's 4-1. They give it back. You're in a one score goal in the third period. I know what you're trying to say. I just think that. I think if you took away, how about this? If you took away every goal scored in the series and just took away that highlight and watched everything in between, I just don't think the difference between the two teams is as obvious as I thought that it was going to be.
When did you move here? Like 7 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, 5.5 years.
Five years ago. If you moved here this year, are you, and you're talking about the Avalanche, all you've watched is this year, you've watched this team into the postseason. What would your panic meter be at if all you had ever seen was this year?
First, I would say thank you to our listeners in Littleton for making 104.3 the Fan.
No doubt. No question.
That'd be the obvious thing to say first.
Right.
I would be less jaded.
Natural.
I would be less jaded. But the problem is, I haven't been here just 1 year, and it's been the same group that we've been watching fail at this exact moment over and over and over. So it's hard for me to take the old neuralizer from Men in Black and say, forget everything leading up to this point, because it's so much a part of their real history.
All right, I'll tell you where my panic meter is a little bit higher. Darcy.
Yep.
That's where I'm like, oh, man. It started when you guys remember when the season began. There was a point in time that we were all saying, hey, do we have a goaltender controversy?
I remember.
And that was a legitimate conversation.
Yeah.
Darcy did get benched in one game. Didn't last much more than that. But a lot of us were asking, is Darcy Kuemper going to be the guy? He's given up a few soft goals throughout the postseason, but then he kind of turned it on. Game three that he gave up a few soft goals early, but then he turned it on late in the game. And then now it's just starting to add up. It's just been enough soft goals here and there. James, how you feeling about Darcy?
Yeah, I mean, Jared Bednar dismissed the question last night, but he got asked in postgame, hey, are you thinking about making a change in net? That's not a good sign. And is he an upgrade from Philip Grubauer? Probably. But is he a significant upgrade? I mean, it kind of feels like the conversation we were having about Teddy Bridgewater, right? Like, was he an upgrade? Yeah, but was he a significant upgrade that was really going to make a difference? Because, Zach, to your point, it's the same group that has failed in the second round the last 3 years, except for that position, essentially. And is he good enough? Is he a big enough upgrade where you sit there and go, he's going to steal you a game?
I don't think so.
I don't either. We haven't seen it.
At least I don't feel that way. I know we haven't seen it. And if there's one position in that sport that is out of the flow. You know, hockey, basketball, they are a flowy sport. It's less timing and less rigid like football and baseball. There's one position that requires sitting there and thinking more than any other. And it's like putting. It's like free throws, playing goalie. And if there's doubt starting to come in and you're giving up soft goals, golly.
Well, and you watch Tampa, you watch the Rangers, guys, teams who have elite goaltenders. Like, you, if you're an Avs fan and you want to look way ahead, root for Carolina.
That's the
team you want to play, because the Rangers and the Lightning, they got guys who can blank you no matter what you're firing at them. And the Avs just don't. The Avs have a what would you give Kuemper, a C plus B minus type of a goaltender?
Until last night, I would have given him B.
But like Andre Vasilevsky, you're talking about that guy's gonna do a cartwheel in the Hall of Fame one day, maybe. Yeah. Like, it's like.
Right.
All right,
Igor
all right.
Shesterkin, like, there's another one's like, okay, there's a guy that can steal a game. Keep them in the series.
I'm going to see if you guys got the right answer or the wrong answer. Would you replace him?
No. I don't think Francois is an improvement.
1,000% no.
Okay, good. I'm just making sure we're all on the same page here. Totally agree with Jared Bednar.
That would represent a freak out.
That's right, and that's why you don't make any moves yet. You know, if you truly are on your heels, I know a couple of the guys in the post game. They said they're on their heels for the majority of the game. If you're truly on your heels, okay, you can make a move. You can make a switch. But you have been the most dominating team in the NHL all year long. You've played great throughout the playoffs. Don't make a panic change, because when you make a change of goaltender, that's a psychological change for the entire team.
Like, you're changing quarterback almost.
I think goaltender to me is like a closer in baseball, right? So, like, if you had a guy blow game five, come out and you were in the, you know, second in the NLDS and he blew game five, you got to go back to him in game six, right? He's been your guy all season long, because otherwise everybody's thinking, well, geez, nothing's safe. We don't have our guy down there. You got to just make it look like he had one bad game. We've trusted him. He's not going to be flawless. We go right back to him. Otherwise, it turns into, you know, Bud Black doesn't know who to get on the phone and get up down there when it's when they got to lead in the eighth or ninth inning. I think it's like a closer. I think you got to let it be. You got to ride it out at this point.
You know what else you got to let it be? Just let Bud Black be. It's not his fault. It's not his fault, James.
You got a guy on
just
first.
Let Bud Black be.
Agreed.
Focus on the things that matter here, James. Stop doing coffee polls about Bud Black. Don't be worried about Bud Black. He's
not
the
throwing
problem
in a bunt
right now.
Every once in a while. Down a run. Okay. You know, move the runner over to second.
If you put curtains up, just like, and nobody could see in your house still sucks. Okay, just because they can't see in the house, you could focus on the wrong things. At what point do we just stop talking about anything with the Rockies and just only talk about the stinking owner? At what point do we do that?
But you want to know what's crazy? Because I heard Mike say this this morning. He's like, dude, does anybody even want Rockies updates? And I understand the larger overarching sentiment. But the Rockies are 3 games under 500. They're supposed to be like 50 games under 500. So they're a middling team. I know they're last in the NL West. I'm not here to like, but they are an assumed doormat. James, if you guys didn't know, they're an assumed doormat, and they are right there below 500.
But how many people know where they're playing tonight?
If we went and asked ten people at a coffee shop, at Corky's coffee shop, and asked 10 people that, you know, did you know where they played? And there was only one person that knew where they played.
The Nationals,
and he was a Pirates fan. That was the only reason people. That was the only reason he got the answer right. None of the Rockies fans got it right.
Why am I the only one that calls out James on these polls? Like I cannot be the only one that does not believe. Funny. I get like you. People believe you're actually doing these polls.
I got a clipboard. I got a pencil.
Name tag.
Yep.
I got some gift cards.
Christos.
See, I knew it was a C.
Yeah. Christos. Yeah. Corky's. Yeah. Christos. Yeah. Close enough. I knew what you were talking about.
Simpsons episode or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Fellas, I don't know what's going on. We got D-back out in St. Louis. You might have to stick around here, one of you two bums, all right? Maybe both of you.
I thought I had to do it. I texted Richie. I was about to do a U-turn when I heard you come into a segment, I think it was like 2 days ago, solo.
Oh, yeah.
And the way you handled it, like a grizzled veteran.
Pat me on the back a little bit more. Dude, I knocked that thing. Somebody's got to say it. I knocked it out of the park.
You knocked it out of the park. Dude, if Stokely was in that position, it'd be like you would like hear him drowning in air.
I did have like a quick flutter of the heartbeat.
Yeah.
It definitely got panicked. We got a special guest joining us, huh?
It's a D. There he is.
Oh, there we go.
There he is.
There we go. And here we all thought we were going to get another free segment without him. Huh?
No. Nope. Too bad. Too bad. I made it to St. Louis again. So,
we had to take care of some stuff here. So let's just leave it there.
All right, buddy.
Well, but I was here on time.
Here we go. Here comes the point where he starts blaming other people.
No. I'm sure there's something I can do.
D-Mac, you're at a new spot. You're at a new radio station. Maybe show up more than 15 minutes early, you know?
Wow.
Maybe make sure that you've got time to test the connection and make sure that everything's okay.
That's exactly what I did. But thank you, Tyler, for having my back. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Should we take a break and start making fun of me? Are we fully ensconced in that?
I'm not making fun of you today. I'm flat out angry at you today.
Okay.
I'm going to be destroying you all day long. What you did yesterday, the way that you tempted fate, you didn't even tempt fate. You asked for fate to smack you in the face. I'm going to be letting you have it all day long, my friend.
Did we already thank somebody from somewhere for making 104.3 the fan part of your day?
Zach Bye did your job, and he thanked the folks. Where were those folks? Littleton. Yeah,
Littleton.
We thanked the folks out in Littleton.
All right, well, listen, let's come back, and we can get all into it. And I'll tell you what St. Louis feels like today, because we are here back in St. Louis. This is The Drive on the Fan.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 104.3thefan.com.